Hello and welcome to the Digital Kindness Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Marcinik, and I am so glad you are here. Today, we welcome Carl Hooker to the pod. Carl, welcome.
Thank you, Andy, for having me. Excited to be on here.
I'm excited to have you here. This is our season one. This is our finale episode. So we are going out one of the biggest voices in the industry in ed tech.
Not that kind of voice.
Not that kind of voice. Not that kind of voice. Yeah, we'll save that for my next podcast. So I just want to kind of introduce Carl, because a lot of you out there listening probably have heard about Carl Hooker, have seen him speak. Carl has spent the last 25 years in education as a teacher administrator focused on thoughtful integration of technology. He consults for multiple districts across the country and is a frequent speaker at state and national events. He is an eight-time author. I'm just going to say that again. He is an eight-time author. He is our Lou Gehrig of EdTech.
Wait, that didn't end well for Lou. So don't.
I didn't, let me say maybe
Cal
Hank
Ripken.
Aaron.
I'm
There
the
you go.
Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken.
Yeah.
Cal Ripken. All right.
There you go. Sorry, we're already off the rails.
Man, I did not have Lou Gehrig jokes on my bingo card today. Carl works with multiple EdTech companies and is a national faculty emeriti at Future Ready Schools. He's also the co-founder of K12Leaders.com, a social community built by educators for educators. And if there's one thing you take from this podcast, it is definitely check out K12Leaders.com. It is a great space. If you are frustrated with all the noise in the other socials, K12 Leaders is a great space to find your nook, find your niche of educators like you talking about all the kind of issues in education. So big plug for
Thank you.
K12leaders.com. It's an awesome site. His book, Learning Evolution, discusses the changes that education will need to make to survive in an AI-enhanced world. His latest book, Zengage, dives into the balance of technology, cell phones, anxiety, and digital well-being. Carl is also the co-host of my favorite podcast, and I was on their podcast last year, the Undisrupted Podcast with Carl and Adam Feil. We had Adam on, I think, episode three this year. So it is great to have you here, Carl. I'm sure I could go on with your bio. I've been following you since my early days in the education field, and I always appreciate your work, and I am glad you're here today.
And I met you at a bar in Philly. I just remembered that. I was trying to think of the first time I ever met you in person, because I think we connected online several times. But yeah. And I think you're also brave not to have, actually not so brave, not to have Adam and I on at the same time, because that could be disastrous. I don't think we've ever been on a show as guests. We've been hosts, of course, but probably wise.
Well, even though this is a season finale of my season one, season two is coming up. So I think we're going to
Nice.
make that happen. I think we're going to make that happen. We'll get you guys on the ballot for season two.
It's when you start doing the shenanigans, like the hot wings challenges. That's when you know you've jumped the shark. That's what we like. Season four, we decided to do. Let's eat hot wings while we do a podcast. That was with like super high spicy. That was dumb. We also recreated the ghosts of Christmas past, but we used it with ed tech tools, and we had to act, put on costumes. Yeah, just try to avoid some of the big mistakes that we've made. That's all I'd say. And then you'll be the most successful podcast in education starring Andy.
I love it. I love it. I will definitely do that. And Philly stopped the Wing Bowl, but maybe I'll bring it back in season two. We'll
Let's
see what
go. Let's go.
happens. So speaking of Philly, Carl, right out of the gate, you and I are both we connected primarily around EdTech, but I think our connection burgeoned even further when we found out that we were both diehard Philadelphia Eagles fans.
Go
So
birds.
right out, go birds. Yes. Right out of the gate, is Jalen Hurts a top 11 Philly athlete?
We must follow the same stuff. Our algorithms are the same, because I got that like yesterday. I got the 10, Philly athletes of all time, or right now, I think. I would say right now for sure. I think all time, it would be hard to put him in the top 10. Or top 11 even, but I would say top. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of like who's out there that would be better. I mean, obviously, Saquon, just in my heart of hearts, I'm still a big Saquon fan. And of course,
Big time.
Bryce with the Phillies, and Embiid is, whenever he's healthy. So I
Every
would say
other
for
year.
sure, I'd have him right around the middle. I mean, and maybe not number one, but he's definitely, I might even be top five, I would say. You where do you have him?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there, because he did, he won the Super Bowl last year. He was in the Super
Check.
Bowl
Let's say that
two
again,
years.
by the way. The reigning Super Bowl champion, Jalen Hurts. Yes, there we go.
The reigning Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia, reigning two-time Super Bowl champion, Philadelphia Eagles. A sentence I never thought I would say in my entire
life.
I
know, right? I'm pinching myself. Like, we're in an alternate universe. By the way, I live in Texas. Y'all know there's a team in Texas that loves to give me grief all the time. And it's been so nice to not even have to say a word. I just wear the hat. Yeah. I put on the jersey and I walk off, because it's been it was before floppy disks. Let's just say it was the last time the Cowboys were even sniffed the Super Bowl. Sorry. Okay. Let's move on. That's not being digitally kind, by the way. I just realized that.
That is not digitally kind, but it's okay if in the context of the Cowboys, you can kind of let it fly.
Okay, good. You find that on the back page of your book. It's like there's this asterisk that says, except for Cowboys fans.
Exactly. But no, if you would ask 12-year-old Andy, you know, you'd be like, hey, someday you're going to have a podcast and you're going to utter the sentence, you know, two-time Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. He would have laughed at you and be like, that's funny. I'm going to play third base for the Phillies. What are you talking about?
And what's a podcast? Yeah.
What's a podcast? But no, I think Jalen is right there. I mean, I think he is, you know, he's still like, what is he, 25, 26? He's a kid. He's got so much yet to do, and all he's done since he showed up and taken over for, you know, the great Carson Wentz. He is just, again, a name right. I never thought I'd never name I never
Very
thought
I'd cheap podcast. That, folks.
You know,
he was good for a minute. He was good for a minute.
He got us there. He got us there to, you know, and he couldn't finish it. I mean, we had to have Nick come in and finish it, but I mean, he got us there. But yeah, I mean, I think Jalen has so much more room to grow. And I think I'm more excited now that the pressure of, you know, winning a Super Bowl, getting to a Super Bowl, and, you know, going through that tumultuous 7-game collapse at the end of the season is just like, you know, I think the kid's got so much potential, and I think he's going to be, I think, when we're doing, I don't know, season 15 of the Digital Kindness podcast, we'll be reflecting on the great number one quarterback of all time, Jalen Hurts. That's my prediction.
Wow. I'm
making a hot take right now. So
put it out there, folks. Mark the tape. June 19th, Juneteenth, 2025.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm saying that right from the land of Tom Brady. So happy to.
Also brazen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going all in. So, all right. So I'm sure we could talk about Jalen Hurts and the upcoming season for the Philadelphia Eagles, reigning Super Bowl champions, who beat the Kansas City Chiefs, who didn't score, I don't think, in the first quarter.
Checks notes.
But yeah. Checks and checked. Yeah. But I digress. We have a lot to talk about with I always feel like this is such a big time in the edtech world. This is kind of the sweet spot of, you know, everyone's finishing up school. You have some big conferences on the horizon. ISTE Live is coming up. ISTE Live plus ASCD is coming up in San Antonio. We're going to get to that and talk about what you'll be sharing there. But I just want to kind of jump in our DeLorean for a little bit, Carl. And, you know, when I first kind of came into the edtech space, I was rolling out a large scale iPad 1-to-1 up here in Burlington, Massachusetts. Similarly, you were in that kind of similar space, rolling out a huge large scale iPad initiative down in Texas. You know, we have a lot of overlap in our work. We've both implemented these programs. You know, one of the reasons I started writing my most recent book was, you know, I did a lot of reflecting on those implementations, and I actually went back and read one of my early books, my first book that I ever wrote. It's called The One-to-One Roadmap, Setting the Course for Innovation and Education.
I don't remember the title there. You had a hard time getting it out.
It was the longest title ever. I'm like, can't we just make this a hashtag? One-to-one roadmap. Stop. Yeah. Figure it out. Open the book. But, you know, thinking about where we've come from and thinking about the next generation of students and educators we're going to be supporting, reflecting on that work, you know, where did we come up short, and what are some of the learnings from that time and to where we are now?
Sit around the fire, kids. We're going to tell you a story of way things used to be back in the olden days.
I know.
Speaking of Nick Foles, there's a tie in here. So when I went to Westlake High School, Nick was just graduating high school. We started the one-to-one program 2 years after Nick Foles graduated Westlake High School. Just to let y'all know, like, that's how far back it goes. And that was back when they had those big fat charging cords and the camera just had just come out. In fact, if you Google search a dark day in Westlake history, I actually took video of our first rollout where we shorted the freshmen by like 300. Somehow someone forgot to carry the one or something. And all these freshmen show up to get their iPads and the assistant principal's like, I'm sorry, but we do not have enough to find. And everyone starts moaning and hissing and throwing stuff. And I, of course, take out my phone because I'm like, we got to record this, right? Yeah. I mean, there was so many, I don't know. It's funny because, you know, as we're going through the AI version of what this was for us way back then, we definitely led with the tools first.
Right.
And I think we're seeing that again with AI. And I think that's just because it's like, okay, we need to figure out ways. And this is true. And, you know, I've been dusting off my Sammer catalog lately, or model or whatever you want to call it, because I feel like we almost have to relook at it through the lens of AI. But that was the thing that guided me. And, you know, and a lot of initiatives out there was the Sammer model. And it was just getting past the substitution phase and then realizing that maybe substitution wasn't so bad after all, but having that as a stepping stone or as a way to use technology. So for me, I think where I came up short was I focused so much on the tools because I was just like, get it out there and get it used, not thinking, not to finish that phrase, instead of saying get it used, say getting it used effectively and efficiently and actually to further teaching and learning. Because I saw a ton of what I call gratuitous tech, where it was like, we're going to use tech for tech's sake and, you know, cutesy little Facebook, fake book pages or whatever. I was like, this isn't really moving the needle for technology. So I worry a little bit about that with AI. I get shined by the glitz of that too. So I'm kind of seeing it like, let's make a song, you know, we're going to make a song about this, you know, whatever. And it's fun, but we got to move past that too at some point.
Yeah. And I like that point about the gratuitous text. That is something I felt very connected to as well, where I just felt like I was just, I was putting the gateway drug in all the kids' hands and I'm like, here you go. It'll take you places. But the thing is, I mean, I found so much, and I know you have the same experience, you know, in my own growing in that time when I was working, I was a teacher first, much like yourself. And then I kind of came into the technology space, and where I kind of grew with that was leveraging technology in a really effective way through blogging, putting my voice out there, kind of jumping in the deep end before a lot of other folks came on board to that. And I feel like that benefited me so well. And I wanted my students to have that same experience. I wanted them to be able to, you know, not just like, hey, we're all going to take a test and we all have to learn this one singular way. I felt like, you know, technology was giving us the opportunity to learn in such an array of ways and allow students to, you know, produce their voice in so many different directions. Yeah. And, you know, and I think there was that kind of one kind of sweet spot of like, that was all happening. And then, you know, I think one of the reasons I wrote Teaching Digital Kindness was that all kind of, it was like the, I say this in the book, where it's like, it was the alternate universe in Back to the Future 2, where Biff is president, where Biff is, you know, running everything. And it's kind of where we find ourselves now. And so it's interesting though, but I appreciate that because I also was kind of pushing tech as much as possible because it was, I just felt like there was so much potential for students to learn in so many different ways, right? And I think that's why we do what we do, because we're not just, we're not ones to, I mean, I went to school and I had to have this like rote memorization, and it was like the notes are on the board, the teacher's talking, you're writing it down, then you take a test, rinse, repeat next day.
Right.
And school was so boring. And I'm like, there's got to be a better way. And when technology came about, and the iPad specifically, I think it really showed so many different ways in which you could do amazing things.
Yeah. And I think I knew where I discovered where I felt like I missed the boat. I mean, again, getting the tools out there, I figured it was worth the risk to say like, okay, they may get into some mischief and there may be kids playing games in the back of class. And there was, and a lot of that. And it was before, like, this is the Wild West, you know, this is like before the big MDM, you know, JAMP and all those things weren't really, I mean, they were just getting started. So I can't even tell you how many things were bad. But at one point, I think in 2014, so we're about 3 years into the program, I decided to dress up like a high school student and go to Westlake High School as a student and just sit through sophomore level classes. And I was like, and it was interesting to see. My assumption going in was that the younger teachers were going to be using it and it's going to be engaging, and the older teachers were going to be like, ah, put it away. And it actually turned out it was not that. It was really like the experienced teachers that thought, okay, there's a useful part of this. I'm going to use it as a quizzing structure, or I'm going to use Nearpod to have some information or whatever. And then there was a teacher that was like a brand new teacher that was like standing deliver at the board and calling on the same two kids in class. And I sat there on my device and I was like, I found myself drifting into like, oh, I'm going to play, I might play a game or read a comic book or something online because I was just bored with it, you know, which by the way, you know, comic books is what it was beforehand. It's just, we just had different ways of disengaging ourselves, but now it's so easy to grab that access. So that's when I was like, okay, we got to rethink this because we're really not getting into the deep level of what it can do. There's still the potential for it, but you know, and I think that's just part of it. And that's part of the SAMR model and the implementation, what do they call it? The innovation curve. Like there's the trailblazers and there's the laggards and there's everybody in between. So yeah, lessons learned.
Yeah, no, lessons learned. And I think, you know, I look back on it and I think you and I both can say we're proud of the work we did and like, you know, that we were kind of, you know, setting the course for what we are doing now because we're in this new space of AI and, you know, we're going to get to AI in a little bit. We'll talk about that. But I mean, you know, here we are again, where we have this kind of groundbreaking technology that's in its infancy and it's going to change the way we're all doing things going forward. And it's going to a little bit disrupt, you know, our entire educational space. But before we get to AI, I want to talk about kind of, again, traveling up in our time machine here in our DeLorean. You know, you and I have talked about this, and I think we're on the same page around these ideas, these cell phone bans popping up in schools around America. I found out they're actually popping up in, you know, abroad too, and in European countries is happening. They're actually looking to us in this space. But I want to hear your thoughts on what schools are missing when they're implementing these cell phone bans, because I think this is where we agree a lot on this idea of, yeah, it's easy to ban something. It's easy to say as a politician out there, it's like, hey, we're banning cell phones in schools. I want to hear from you. What are schools missing?
Yeah, let's go back further back in the DeLorean and look at history. Whenever we ban something as a society, how has that worked out for us? And there are times, don't get me wrong, where we have regulations around, you know, there's certain things that we don't want to have kids to have access to, obviously, and that's not what this is about. I understand the reasons why teachers or educators or leaders or why 72% of teachers are in favor of it and 81% of parents or something. I think those numbers might be reversed, but the idea is it's an easy button, right? Let's get rid of it. And you just said in that last segment, we just talked about the disruption of technology and why it's important to still kind of trudge through it because we're preparing kids for the future. Well, if you ban it and block it, then that means that we're assuming that the parents are going to take care of it. And you and I both know we're both parents, but we also work with lots of parents. We know that that's widely different. So why would we ban a tool that they use for communication when we teach other types of communication, like writing letters, like we teach them how to listen to podcasts. We teach them how to read books. I mean, there's all sorts of communication and it comes in and out of the phones, but by banning it, you know, we're basically saying that's not going to be part of it because we feel like it's too distracting and we don't want to take the time to teach the kids how to not be distracted because then they become adults that are extremely distracted, which aren't really helpful for us either. So I'm against them and I know I'm swimming against the stream here again with, like I said, based on the numbers and based on the fact that even the state of Texas, we just passed instructional minutes ban where it's like, you can't have it out during instructional minutes. But again, like you just said, I mean, I could stand up there and say, it's banned. And then like, what does it actually look like boots on the ground? Because teachers are the ones that are ultimately going to be enforcing this stuff. And I mean, sure, it's good to have that behind you if you need it. But I mean, also, when are we going to teach them how to use it? I don't know. So I'm obviously not on the side of banning them. But I also understand that there are times we need to put them away. And I think that's what we need to be teaching them. Not the, we're going to tell you not to have it and we're not going to tell you why.
Right. You make so many good points there, Carl. And I think where I kind of come around with the analogy is, you know, we've spent a lot of money in schools around health and wellness, and I'm talking about nutrition and teaching kids. We're not just banning sugary drinks. Like, we're not the state of New York. We're not banning sugary drinks. We're not banning Fruit Loops. We're not banning, you know, sugary breakfast cereals or anything like that. Fast food. We're not banning that, you know, but we're also teaching kids how to make good choices in a very challenging space. When you go to the grocery store and you see all these, you know, labels and bright colors, and it's like, it's kind of the same thing. And we're spending money to teach kids how to do that. We spent money on even like, you know, talk about the tobacco campaigns and the drug campaigns when we were in school.
Dare.
You know, I dare. I always said, like, I know I come into some family environments where, whether it's Christmas or, you know, whatever, and I see kids like sitting around on a device, right? You see all these kids just sitting around a device. They're like, oh, hey, Uncle Andy, how are you doing? Yeah. And then they're back into it. But like, if all those kids were smoking cigarettes, when we came into the room? Like, what would we do? Would we just be like, oh, hey, you know, it's like, yeah. Hey, you know what? Hey, you know, hey, cuz, like, why does my nephew have a pack of Marlboro Reds rolled in his sleeve? You know, and it's like, and I think it's kind of the same thing, but like, you know, we don't correlate it because it's not a kind of this invisible thing right. that's happening, right? It's mental health it's being affected in our kids. And it's like, I think that's where we agree in this idea, like, yeah, like, I don't want my kids having endless access to just these, you know, rabbit holes of like YouTube and just unguided. Right. I want them to be able to understand how to use the technology well, but like, we're missing that opportunity right now in our space to really do that.
Well, and you just hit on another point that I think that's being missed in all of this, and that is blanket bans, and you're generalizing everything on a phone when we know that right. there's lots of different things you're doing on the phone. That, yes, the short form, short reels, all that stuff is definitely, it's addictive. They've come out and said it. It's the reason why you have it, right? They want right. you to stay on that at certain times. That's the part that's the tricky part. And that's the part that we got to watch out and monitor and take advantage of. But at the same time, if that kid that you come to at Christmas is, you know, working on something, or, you know, it's Procreate on the iPad. So they love to just draw and do digital art. And sometimes they'll doodle with that. One of my daughters mm-hmm. is actually learning how to do crocheting. So she has her device set up where she can see the pattern on her phone. And I don't understand right. it, but there's like granny squares or something. She called it something, but she was basically looking at some boxes yeah. and then at the same time with her hands doing this. And I'm like, yeah, that's, you know, that's one thing. Now, the one thing I will say, and I've been writing about it in this new book, but that I'm curious to hear your take on it. And I call it the emotional support AirPods, like, mm-hmm. You know, the one AirPod that every kid carries with them all yeah. the time. What are your thoughts on that? Because I'm writing about it now, and I'm like, and I've been asking my kids and other kids and just like, why, help me understand, why do you always have that one thing in your ear?
It almost kind of takes me back to fidget spinners because like, yeah.
Tamagotchi, like, why? Tamagotchi.
Yeah, no. Tamagotchi, yeah. It's like, okay, I get it. Like, is it a comfort thing? Is it, you know, and so like, you know, it's funny because I was actually just talking to my brother the other day. I have a extra set of the old because of the charging ports change, AirPods Max. And I was like, hey, would my nephew who's now going to be 8 years old, you know, I was like, would he want those? And he's like, oh yeah, I think so. I think he's kind of getting into that. But, you know, it's like, is that something that like, I don't know, is it a sneaky way? I'm not really sure where I stand on that because I see adults doing it as well. Yeah. Like I see adults, like, I mean, you go to any airport gate and everyone is walking around talking to themselves. And it's like, I thought we got rid of this with the whole Bluetooth clips in our ears, but then, you know, AirPods came in and it's interesting because you look at where Apple's roadmap is with AirPods. And I think they want us wearing these things all the time.
For sure.
And they've blanketed it like Apple typically does. It's like, we're also helping, you know, people who have hard of hearing, like that's great. That's fantastic. But like, we don't need to be wearing AirPods and connected in this space. And, you know, and if I think about it and it's like I have a Vision Pro. I was an early adopter of that.
Yes, you were.
Ridiculous expensive technology that has some dust on my desk right here to my right. But it's like,
I knew it. It's like, I was like, tell me in 6 months if you're still using it, Marcinik. And I was like, I never heard of you guys for the first yeah. month. I got all these images and cool things. And now
yeah.
nothing.
Yeah. I think we actually had a side chat with myself, Bello and Phil Hintz. We're all just like talking about it. I'm like, yeah, it's really cool. Like I can see cool stuff. And then it was like, you know, there's now crickets and there's dust on that chat. It's like so far down my list, I can't even find it. But I think it's like this idea of like, we're kind of going towards this space where our whole entire like periphery is being ensconced in technology.
Yeah.
They already got our wrists. And the data I'm tracking every day on my wrist is absurd. And then, you know, we have the AirPods, we have the phones, we have the Meta glasses, you know, they're just encapsulating us in this technology, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes in 5 years.
Isn't it interesting too that like as you're saying that, like I immediately start getting a negative feeling, right? Like I'm like, God, they're making us do this or tracking. But I started thinking like you just said with the AirPods and the people that are hard of hearing and the tracking, the health tracking. There's so much positive too, but it's funny how the narrative, right. probably main scale, maybe it's just what we follow and our algorithms and everything else, is that we tend to drift to negative because. And I'm the same way, by the way. I'm not saying. I mean, I catch myself doing it when I'm working, especially now with Gen Alpha kids and trying to figure out what drip, Ohio, yeet, bro, low key, sus, cringe is telling me or whatever. Like, did you speak English or are you like Pauly Shore back in the day? But so I find myself drifting into that. But then at the same time, I'm like, all right, let me try to have more understanding. So like with the AirPod thing, for example, I've asked kids, like, just tell me what's the thought. And they're like, well, I like to have, sometimes it's comfort. Like you mentioned that anxiety is definitely, you know, research has been out in the last few years, especially post COVID. There's a lot of increased anxiety, which is again, part of the impetus for this new book I'm writing. And I think some of it is that's a way for them to transition into a new, like I'm going from leaving my car and going into this big dinner thing. I need to have that on. So then we talk, having more of an outward discussion about what does it represent when you have it in, because that tells me, right, as someone who's visually looking at you, that you're probably not paying attention to me, or you're paying only partial attention. Although it's not as bad as like having the phone in your face either. So maybe that's a step up. And again, there's no real right answer. I just like the conversation around it.
No, and I think you make a lot of really good points here too. And I think there's definitely that, like, yeah, let's look at it at the negative aspect. Like, I think that's kind of in our roles, Carl, that's what we do. We're like, we look at the worst case scenario of the technology and what it can lead to. But I also see it from like an equity standpoint, like kids who can't get out of the city or can't get, you know, out of rural areas, but could maybe have an affordable Apple Vision Pro someday that can take them places and engage them in spaces, both audibly and visually, that can really expand their horizons. And that's where I think why we do what we do is because technology can be that leveler where the kids who have all the opportunities that can go to the Louvre in Paris and can, you know, travel to, you know, South Africa and have those experiences, where a kid may not have those resources, but can also get there and experience that and connect with people in those spaces. That's where I think, you know, once we can make that technology affordable, you know, then it becomes a leveler in a lot of different ways when we talk about technology. So,
yeah. And I will say this too, as someone who's now north of a big number, 50 in age, that, yeah. One more quick thing about the AirPods. I now wear them to concerts, and it's not so I can listen to music. It helps me.
Yeah.
You get to a certain age, all of a sudden you get this ringing in your ear that doesn't go away. I was like, you know what?
Yep.
I'm going to be that dude at the rock and roll, the Linkin Park show, but I was listening. I could hear it thanks to the transparency mode. I can still hear the music, but it's not destroying my eardrums at the same time. So even my 13-year-old's like, Dad, it's a little bit loud. You should put on your AirPods. I'm like, oh, I'm so old.
I love that the next generation is like, Dad, take your technology. Please put it on.
Yes. Plug in quick.
Yeah. Quick plug in, Dad. All right. Well, I want to talk a little bit about your new book because I'm really excited about this book. I think it's a really good, I think it's a very, very timely piece. And we've talked a little bit about it. I know the general premise of it. Can you give the audience kind of a preview of kind of the why of writing this and who this is for?
Yeah.
And the book is Zengaged. Sorry. The book is
Zengaged. And I'm writing two versions of it, just so you know. So the Zengaged teacher version is the one that's almost done, and it'll be out at the end of the summer. That's
right.
Basically it's an educator's guide to teaching the anxious generation. And in that subtitle, you catch the impetus of why I wrote it, because that book came out, The Anxious Generation. And immediately the cell phone, I think you could correlate the sales in that book and cell phone bans across the country just kept going up at the same time. Because in the book, Jonathan Haidt says, essentially, you know, the one chapter on education he writes is like, let's get rid of phones and let's make kids go play outside or something. Like that was, I mean, there's more to it, but that was pretty much the premise of that one chapter. And I thought, man, if I'm a teacher and I'm reading this and I'm like, I don't really have that option, or what is that really teaching the kids, or how is that helping them get forward and, you know, move forward in the future? So I took that and said, you know what, let's make that into a series of things that you can do within the classroom, activities you can do with students that can be tied to curriculum. It could be tied to maybe just the 5 minutes at the end of the day, instead of take out your phones and just play on them. We're going to do this with our phones, or we're going to do this with each other, like talk to each other about a topic or a brain teaser. So lots of little mini activities that can be kind of squeezed into those minutiae of time that you'll have sometimes in the classroom. And then also lots of activities that tie to actual curricular content. So using your phone for data tracking in science, or using your phone to identify species, you know, as you're walking around and doing a nature walk. So again, it's not about putting the phone away. It's about showing how to use it in right ways, but then also teaching the kids, like, what does the balance look like? If I put my phone face up sitting next to me, what is my gut telling me? What is it psychologically doing to me? Because there's research around that I think is true. And it does, when it's nearby and you're looking at it, it cognitively takes a bit away from you. Not a lot, but it is enough to distract you unless you can really start to hone yourself in and be mindful of it. So yeah, a lot of the book is addressing anxieties, not just around phones, but just in life in general with kids these days. And then,
and then
I dive into, again, the balance and activities and things to do within it in the classroom. And then being mindful is another part of it and present in the moment. And I just finished up my second to last chapter was just on focus in general and all the things you can do and how technology can actually help you with this. AI can help you with focus. You know, if I'm losing track of what I'm doing, like AI, give me a list of like five things I need to work on this one particular book or this one. I got to clean my room. Give me a list of like the six things I should be doing. So letting tools help us focus versus distracting our focus, I think is a big part of it too.
Yeah, no, and that's amazing. And I think that was my takeaway when I read The Anxious Generation is that there's a big miss here. And I think what you just did is you filled in that blank because you're right. There are teachers. I mean, cause everyone always talks about, oh, well, look what the Waldorf school is doing. And they're doing amazing stuff. And I'm like, yeah, do you know what those kids are going home at night? They're going home to like multi-million-dollar houses where they have parents who have the time to engage with them, or they hire somebody to engage with them and teach their kids how to use technology appropriately. You know, we don't have that in rural areas and in a lot of our schools across the country who, you know, are still struggling to get, you know, really good bandwidth in their schools, let alone have somebody that is teaching them how to balance the technology use. And so that's why I think we totally agree on that idea of like sweeping bans do nothing for our kids. They just, it's the easy button, like you said, sweeps the problem under the rug. And then the kids go off to college, they go off to their first job, and they don't know how to use these tools effectively. And more often than not, they're going to have to use these tools in a very professional manner in schools. I mean, I approve time cards on my phone. I answer emails on my phone. I have to take calls sometimes on my phone. And so I see my phone as a work device, and I'll be honest, I'll be the first one to say, like, there are times when I jump into TikTok and I ride the wave and I ride it all the way down till maybe 10 o'clock at night. And until
your legs get numb from sitting on that toilet seat, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, and I better get up. This is too much.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they say you're only supposed to be on there 10 minutes. And I've definitely blown through that multiple times. And it wasn't because what I ate. It was just because I was in a really good rabbit hole of an algorithm. So
it wasn't the Wagyu steak. Yeah, that's good. But that's interesting you say that too, the rabbit hole part. I bring that up. I mean, I do bring that up in the book. And there's an interesting thing I did as an activity with my own kids. It's a longitudinal study about usage of social media, let's say. So we'd like to look every week at what our device usage is in terms of screen time and pickups and all of that. Yeah. One thing, an activity that's pretty neat that we did with a bunch of kids, a group of students, high school kids, is like, look at, see how much time you spend on social media, which, by the way, 4.8 hours is the average of a high school teenager on social media every day. I said, now times that by the amount, times that by 365 days, figuring out that you're awake for maybe 16 hours of every day, and then figure out how many days throughout a year you're actually on social media. And if you did 4.8 hours a day, it comes out to 109 days a year that you're on social media. 109 days of every year of your life is just you on social media. And again, I show them that not to say get off of it completely, because like you just said, there's times when you just go on the rabbit hole and that's fun. And you need that kind of brain break in some ways. So I said, but what if you trim that down to like 3 hours, let's say? That's still a lot of time, but all of a sudden now it's only 68 days, you know, and it's like, oh, so looking at things longitudinally, like, wow, it's taking up this much time. And then my kids push back and say, well, what if I was like working out? And I was like, ah, even better. So now you're using the device, you're watching your reels, whatever, but you're also exercising physically. So you're engaging your body when your mind is kind of disengaged. So I think it leads to great discussions, but guess what? None of those happen if we ban it, right, Andy? It's all
exactly.
gone.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think kids want strategies to balance the phone. Like you just said, they want to know how they can kind of condense that time into, you know, from 4.8 to maybe 2 hours, you know, per week, you know? And that's where I think the bands aren't doing these kids any, the bands are doing the kids a disservice, because the kids want to know strategies. They want to know how to use these tools effectively. And they see all of us, or I should say the majority of adults, using them poorly. And so they just kind of go along with it. And, you know, and it really kind of traps us all in this space, but that's the result of what we have with these bands.
Yeah. The adult modeling part is another one that I've talked about in the book with teachers, but I mean, I'll say it with parents too. And, you know, I'll say this quietly because I live with somebody who I said doesn't model it well. I won't say who it is. It's not me. I'll just say that. But her pushback to me was like, well, you know, kids aren't allowed to drink alcohol before the age of 21. And I drink in front of them. And I said, yes. And you're modeling what when you drink. You're not getting like completely obliterated when you drink. You're showing right. them like, I'm going to have a glass of wine with dinner, just like you would show them, I'm putting my phone away with dinner. I mean, those are the exact, I mean, it's like you're going back to your earlier analogy about the sugar. It's the same thing. What are we modeling for them? It's not necessarily usage. It's overusage that we're trying to say like, hey, I'm spending way too much time on this, audibly saying it out loud. I'm going to put it down and put it away. And that's the thing that's the discussion that needs to happen.
I agree. 100%. Carl, I'm going to just kind of shift a little bit because I know you're doing a lot of work with AI. I heard in your latest podcast with you and Adam, you have a AI bootcamp coming up this summer. I want to hear about that as well. But as school leaders head into the summer, as educators head into the summer, what should they be thinking about when it comes to AI in the classroom and what's going to be waiting for them next fall?
Yeah, I think we're this is accelerated a lot faster than the iPads that you and I both lived through. I think we're way, yeah. which is good in some ways, but in other ways it also is overwhelming because through that you're missing lots of different things. I feel like if I don't keep track of my AI news every day that I'm like already way behind. So I think just like that, just like we did back in the day with the apps, like don't focus on how many you can learn, but instead focus on how deeply you can use the tool. And I think with AI classrooms that I'm working with this summer, most of that content is built around the idea of using it as a creative tool, showing different ways to implement it in parts of the learning process. So right. I know brainstorming is kind of the big one. Everyone's like, that's the quick, yeah, we can use it for brainstorming. And that's great. Again, I think that's the first, like that's the SAMR S, right? It's just using it as a brainstorm model. But then the next step is like, now what do we do? What if we, instead of using it for brainstorming, what if I brainstorm with a colleague or a student? And then we ask AI to give us an outline, and then we come up together with a joint story or a project that we're working on together. So again, adding the AI part of it with the human creativity, that's really a lot of the work. We're just trying to figure out that balance. And
right.
In fact, one of the sessions I'm doing at ISTE is called Mind versus Machine. And it's all about human creativity partnered with artificial intelligence and how that could be a powerful force for good, especially when it comes to learning. But if we, again, take it away or say you can only use this one tool, then it's somewhat limiting. And I'll yeah. be honest, there's still, I mean, 7 or 8 of the tools I used last year, I don't use this year. So it is changing right. a lot. So for me, it's like I try to make the tools a little more background discussion and then say, okay, but let's really talk about how you could use this to help with evaluation of the learning process, which is not cheatable with AI. So if you evaluate learning process, you're never going to be able to cheat. Yeah. And I think that's important. I think teachers kind of go, well, that's great and all, but how do I have the time to do it? You know? And I'm like, yeah, that's part of, I mean, guess what? AI can help you with that too. It's amazing.
It is. And I think you hit on that, like this idea of like, you know, we dealt with that whole, like, well, they're just going to cheat. And it's like, I think it's not so much. And I think I listened to your, I listened to your podcast with Joseph South, my former boss at the USDOE.
Yeah.
And this idea of, you know, we're now teaching the next generation of AI innovators and designers. And if we're going to just get completely bogged down in this idea of cheating, we're missing the boat. And I think like this idea of cheating being the lead in with the conversation is something we need to kind of just push to the side. And we need to think about how, as school leaders and as people who work within schools, is that how are we going to redesign the learning process? And I think to your point, the process is the most important part. I mean, it was for the Sixers, and I think it is for a
trust the process.
Maybe, yes. Maybe not the best analogy, but the same is for AI. And so, and I'm not talking about Allen Iverson either. You know, I'm talking about, you know, I think, I mean, I use it almost daily. And I think one of the biggest statistics out there, I don't know the exact number, but I heard this on the Verge podcast, is, you know, the number of Google searches has gone down in the past year because people are turning to AI. They're finding more direct results. They're having more conversational approaches to finding what they need. And that was mind blowing to me, as you know, you and I coming into both of our professions in the Google era.
Yeah.
And now that whole era is now kind of slowly changing into this, like, Sam Altman and Johnny Ive going to run the world over the next 10 years. And so, you know, it's an interesting space, but it's like, to think that it's going to go away or to think that it's not going to impact education is just, it's not real.
Yeah, and the rate of change, I mean, even like you're saying, using it as a specific search engine. So I don't know if you've seen the Harvard Business Review release of like the top 100 uses of AI in the last 2 years. But, you know, considering that I would say AI really started in, even though it was November of 22, generative AI, let's say 23. So this is, we're in the third year of it. Interesting to see, like, you know, generating ideas was the number one use. I mean, brainstorming ideas, that was in 24. That's now number six on the list. The top three, not to spoil the whole thing, but if you look it up, the top three uses of AI in 2025 all have to do with personal and professional growth. The first one is therapy and companionship is number one, which some people I say that to, and they're like, ugh, that's scary. And then some people I'm like, or is it an option because you don't have the money to afford a therapist and it's a stepping stone toward it? It's not a replacement for therapy because that you can't replace the human with that. The second one is organizing your life. And the third one is finding purpose. So those are the top three uses of AI right now across the world. Again, that's going to trickle down to us. And the number four use, by the way, enhanced learning, which, hey, that's, I mean, last I checked, we should have that in our schools too.
Yeah.
I also like that fun and nonsense is number six and seven on the last 2 years, because I'm all about the fun and nonsense with AI, like making the 50-year-old version of myself a 10-year-old version, and then making the 10-year-old version of myself a 50-year-old version, and then seeing how bad AI gets it. But anyway, all that to say, I mean, it's multifaceted. And like you said, the search engine part of it is part, but there's all these other components. And you know, if we're just teaching them, use it to generate ideas, that's great. That's a big use. But there's, I know, hundreds of other ways to use it.
Yeah, no, and you're spot on. And I mean, it kind of connects to, I talked with Jane Singleton last week, who deals with a lot of works with neurodiverse learners. And she was saying kind of similar to this idea of like, hey, you're about to go into a really challenging conversation with a parent at a school, you know, maybe use AI to, you know, preview that conversation. Not that AI is going to give you the exact all end all be all answer, but it's going to give you some comfort in the sense of, oh, okay, maybe I should say that. Maybe I shouldn't say this part, but I'll say this part, or I'll say it this way. And I think that's where we are. I think that's, and this technology is going to get better. It's not replacing teachers. It's not replacing people. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's like, this is where it's this balance between human and machine. Yeah. And that's where I think we're really going to be for the next several years as this technology grows and evolves. And hopefully it can stay as pure as it is.
Well, maybe we learn from social media. I mean, that's my hope, is that we learn
social
media. Remember the promise? I mean, that's how we connected. And it was 2007, we're writing our blogs in 2009, we're on Twitter. And then it just, you know, 2015, 16, I don't know, maybe there was a big election or something, but at some point, I mean, it just went downhill, and it became what it's become. So my hope is that AI does not become what's happened to social media, because there's still a lot of promise to social media too. But, and again, guess what? Who's the common denominator in all this? It's not that, I mean, there's technology, but it's the humans, right? We're the ones that are screwing this thing up with the deep fakes now, or the silly videos and burning you know, thousands of trees because we want to make silly videos over and over again. And, you know, there's a lot of talk around the energy consumption around AI too, which, you know, it's going to get better over time, but I think right now it's a concern.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is. So, Carl, you are going to be at, as we kind of previewed early on, you're going to be at ISTE Plus. I wrote this down in my notes because I want to make sure I get this.
Yeah, don't forget the plus.
ISTE Plus ASCD Live !
Yes,
in San Antonio. Can you share, just kind of, it's kind of a two parter here. Can you share some like tips for folks who are maybe going to their first ISTE? Or folks who are going to ISTE and, you know, just see everything and it's just like always overwhelmed. And then where can we see you and where can folks connect with you during this time in San Antonio?
Yeah, I actually am. It's funny you mention that, because this week I started writing a blog that I never posted. You ever do that where you're like, I have this great blog and I start writing it and then 15 other things popped up and I got distracted with TikTok. No. But I started writing a blog, so I'm trying to find it real quick. But essentially it was my tips for just exactly what you're talking about. It's kind of a preview, but I break it down into different components. And so I'll just do this. Whether you're new or you've gone before, I think for me, I kind of break it down into four parts. The first part I say is, so I tied it to Texas too. So I say breakfast, tacos, and breakout sessions, right? So the first thing you do is you're looking at those sessions. What I try to do is, because there are, you know, hundreds, it seems like every hour, there's not, but it seems like it. I take AM and PM chunks. And I'll do like, okay, let me find maybe one or two sessions in the AM and one or two sessions in the PM that I want to go do. And if that's it, that's great. If I learn one or two things from those, it's a successful day.
Right.
If you try to go to everything, you're going to be running around, and you also need time to decompress after those sessions, which we don't do a lot of. My second tip is enjoy the side dishes, but also enjoy the side conversation. So, you know, when you're talking to someone in the hallway, don't feel like I've got to go catch 50 AI tools in 50 minutes. No, I'm going to continue my conversation with this person I just ran into, or someone I'm connecting with, or a colleague. I think those are so important too. And then the last couple I say is like, come for the steak and stay for the sizzle. The vendor hall is the sizzle, you know, and it goes from aisle 100 to 3,782 or whatever it is. And it could be overwhelming, but again, even having a plan in there, like, look, there are some great nuggets. There's folks, I'm one of them. I'm presenting in the vendor hall a couple times. So you can find amazing presentations that are shorter.
Yep.
I think if you have a crew with you, that's always good, because I feel like there's strength in numbers when, if you feel like you're getting overwhelmed with vendors trying to get you, you know, free pens or whatever. And then my last bit of advice is don't skip the dessert, which is the evening stuff. And I feel like ISTE can be split into two parts. It's day ISTE plus ASCD live exclamation point. And then night ISTE plus ASCD live exclamation point. And that is like all the after hour, the breakfasts in the morning and the after hours things. Yeah. Like I'm doing a pickleball event with Magic School and Adobe on Sunday. And then I'm doing a poetry slam with Adam and Brisk teaching on Monday. So like to Great. Me, that's, it's going to keep me busy. Like I'm hosting those things, but it like, I'll just find one or two. That's another one. Don't hop to, you could try to get to like 14 of them, but I mean, it's, you're going to be so worn out, and your brain, you know, it's a muscle. You have to recover it. So, that's all the stuff I'm doing. I'm doing a couple sessions too, like in the main hall, and then a couple, like I said, in the exhibit hall, but break it down into smaller chunks. That's a big part.
Yeah. And having attended ISTE for several years, I agree. That is, have a plan going in. I mean, most of us are just wrapping up our school years, and we're getting past that point, and then we're jumping into ISTE, which is like this amazing experience. And there's so much going on, but you have to really, like you said, chunk it out, plan it out, and go in with that plan and stick to it. Because if you try and do everything, if you try and be everywhere for everyone, you are going to run yourself ragged, and you're going to wake up on the 4th of July, like, you know, like a,
it goes right like up to the 4th of July too. I mean, that's,
it does.
So make a plan, stick with it, and be flexible with it too. So like, if that's why I say the AM PM chunks, cause like, man, I'm having this great chat with somebody. I'm about to miss this one session, but if I continue, maybe I'll just go to lunch early, you know, so you move some things around, but I'm with you. And then again, I mentioned it quickly, but reflect. I mean, too often it's not, maybe at the end you have a chance, but try to do it every day. I try to make every day a point of 5 minutes of internal reflection, write it down or put it in your brain and just say, oh, I learned this and this today, or a couple of things I want to follow up on. I put it in my little notes on my phone, because the phone isn't always bad. Right. So you put your notes in there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's kind of like that Sherry Turkle thing of like being alone together and taking some time to be with yourself during ISTE, you know, reflect, get it down, jot it down, and then, you know, have fun because it's a fun event and there's so much going on. So. All right. Well, Carl, we have one final question that we ask every guest on the show. What strategies do you use to step away from the digital world?
I mean, one of my favorite pastimes is playing poker. Now, I do play poker online, but that's digital. So I'll leave that part out. But one of the things now that we're up past COVID is starting hosting poker games again and just poker nights at my house. Nice. And it's not just because it's fun and we get to razz each other, but it's very much a social game. We don't play. I mean, we throw in some money in there and it's fun, but for me, it's like getting together again with family and friends, creating experiences. In my time at Eanes before this, I love to create, there's an event called iPad Palooza that I ran for several years, and then LearnFest. Yep. And for me, I really miss the idea of hosting experiences. So I'm always trying to figure out ways to interact with the community. I'm actually planning right now what we're calling a dive-in movie night, because we have our community pool, but it closes at 9. So I'm on the HOA board, so I'm trying to get us like, let's leave it open and let's have an adults only dive-in movie theater. We'll watch, you know, Jaws or Fast Times or something and floaties. And just, again, my thing is like getting connected with people again in the physical realm is how I kind of center myself when I feel like I'm too sucked into the digital realm.
I love that. And yes, there's so much that we're still just getting back from that post-pandemic time where we're just being together again and doing things in person. And I think playing poker is such a great example because it's such a in-person engaging thing, and the bodies in the room and the personalities in the room. It's such a fun experience. So,
and I teach my kids how to play it too. They get to bring their friends the next day. They bring their friends. They all got to throw in $5. It's real. I say, I'm not going to play with you, but I will teach you how to play and learn the skill set of math and social problem solving, looking at physical ticks. I mean, there's so many neat things that come out of it. And so I'll host like a poker boot camp every summer, which is unofficial. Although I do think would be fun to do is like, say the boot camp's $20, but I get to play. And if I win, I keep all the money. No, that's kind of evil.
I love that. Yeah. I have a feeling your ninth book is going to be about like life skill, like teaching poker, life skills for life, you know, basically.
I'm all in.
You're right.
Yeah.
There's so much you can learn from that game. It's a very simple game, but there's so much you can learn about people and the human condition. It's fascinating. So
yep.
I look forward to that book, Carl.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Well, this has been, you know, anybody who's been listening to this podcast, all seven of you this season, it's my mom, Andy's mom. all the moms out there listening to this podcast and asking me every week how I find it. You know, I just want to thank everyone for listening, for tuning in. There will be a second season. I'm hoping to launch that in August. But I want to really thank all my guests this past season. But I really want to especially thank Carl. This has been a fun conversation. This is why I do this. I think this is why you guys do this. We love to connect. We love to engage, and we love to just talk. And I'm sure we could go on for two or three more hours about, you know, all the work that we've done in education, but all the work that's still out there and needs to be done. So thank you again for sharing your wisdom and your ideas today.
Yeah. And my challenge for you is at some point, one of these episodes in one of the upcoming seasons will be live from Lincoln Financial Field. Let's do it. Let's make it happen.
All right. We're going to make that happen. All right. Season two.
Season two
and season 10 for you guys is going to be it's going to be crazy. All right.
Yes.
We got a banner to raise. All right, my friend. Well, you take care and enjoy ISD. And make sure if you're going to ISD, check out Carl. Make sure you check out his book, Then Gaged, which should be out relatively soon. You know, have a great summer, educators. Take some time to reflect and take some time to, you know, enjoy and just be in nature and be with yourself and disconnect. And we will see you next season.
Go Birds.
Go Birds.